This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
10, 10, 20, now 30, now 40, now Wasson, now we're to give it a 40, now 50, now Ryan and Paul, now we're to give it a 50, now 60, now 70, now we're to give it an 80, 98.9. So, Wasson Business Show.
This is the Wasson Business Show. Now, here are your cow tipping, ice fishing, polka dancing, beer brock frying, cheese curd loving hosts, Ryan and Paul!
Show with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's our favorite part of this song, Jason Mraz. Well, I heard two men talking on the radio.
Yeah, love that line.
Well, I heard two men talking on the radio.
Here we are, two men talking on the radio.
That's us.
Just jabbering away. And if you've blown your New Year's resolutions already, don't worry your life away.
You know, most people blow their New Year's resolution statistics show by the second Sunday of the year.
I love it when you bring in the statistics.
I try.
The economist in you.
That's right. I can't stay away from them.
Well, we got this. 2025. Everybody relax. We got this.
Yes, we're 4 days in, for goodness sake.
As my grandpa Jimmy used to say, if you've got something to worry about, tell your grandma Edie and she'll worry for you.
That's right. Grandma Edie was a famous worrier.
Yeah, real worry wart. Hopefully you've got somebody to tell your problems to so they can worry for you.
Otherwise, call in and talk to us about it.
We're happy. 715-9-WASAW. Happy Valentine's Day, by the way.
Already we're doing that?
It's already up in the stores already.
We can't be, as a society, we can't be without a looming holiday.
We have to loom. Those holidays have to loom.
All right, well, happy Valentine's Day then.
The commercials are already on for Target and everything.
I know I'll be going to Evolutions.
I'm
going to
focus on maximum positivity this year.
Wow, okay.
That is one of my New Year's resolutions. I just read an article in Fast Company magazine about this person that took a negativity fast.
Oh,
you're a faster.
Sure, once in a while.
Intermittent faster.
Yeah, why not?
Well, this is a negativity fast.
You take a fast from being negative.
That's
generally
right. For 30 days, okay. And then they said it worked out so well, they did it for another 30 days.
Wow.
They just cut out everything negative in their life.
I wonder how one does that. I can't even imagine.
We'll post the link on our Facebook thing.
Oh, what a pain, but we'll do it. Oh, there I am, negative.
All right, you're off. I'm cutting it out.
I can't help myself.
Well, you're off. Okay, you're back on.
Thank you.
It was too much dead air.
All right, it's all...
welcome back.
Unicorns and rainbows from here on out.
2025.
We're here. We've arrived.
It was a quarter century ago that we went through 2000.
Yeah, Y2K.
Who's coming up on the show this year, Paul?
Oh my gosh, we got a big list of guests. It's going to be better than ever. We got Charles Skinner.
Owner of Granite Peak.
It is
he doesn't
glorious.
Own the mountain, he owns the ski resort.
He owns the peak.
Yeah.
Also, Mr. Ron Clemish.
Oh.
Owner of Wasa Supply Company.
Yeah, I think he sold the company to his employees now. It's an ESOP, but we'll hear all about that.
Doesn't he have something with a private jet situation going on?
We'll hear all about it.
Okay, can't wait.
How about the East Bay story from Art and Rick and hopefully Harry as well, the three guys that really took that company to great heights?
Art, Rick, and Harry. Can't wait.
How about this one? Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Top Gun pilot of an F-16, Mr. Ryan Gaffney.
Oh, wow.
Pretty sure his code name is Stalker.
I think he flies F-35s now.
Well, we'll hear all about it.
Can't wait. Cool.
That's like he's not Maverick or Goose. He's Stalker.
Oh, wow. That's intense. How about Mr. Mike Hahn coming in?
Michael Hahn, the CEO of digital marketing firm Tittle.
Yeah.
Tittle or Tittle?
I go by Tittle.
Okay.
I guess.
They are experts at creating viral trends using the power of social media influencers.
He's going to tell us how it goes.
We're going to go viral with Michael.
Can't wait.
Viral with Michael, yo.
And a special guest from none other than the Green Bay Packers.
All right. So 2025, I am pumped about, speaking of Valentine's Day, just before Valentine's Day, the new Nicholas Butler book comes out.
Oh, I can't wait to read that. Yeah. Nicholas, one of our favorite guests. He is an excellent author.
Episode number 9 of the Wausau Business Show. Nicholas Butler, New York Times bestselling author. Shotgun Love Songs was his number one
bestseller book.
Yeah. And it's loosely based on Nick's relationship with global rock star Justin Vernon, who goes with the band
Bon Iver. I think it's Bon Iver. Yeah. Can we settle on that?
He wrote us a text after that episode aired, and it was the nicest compliments that we've received in 2024.
Yep.
And he said, wow, that interview was in great company with Monocle Magazine out of London and the New York Times. Thank you very much. It was his text. And hopefully he'll come back on the show and talk about his new book.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it.
Coming out just between now and Valentine's Day. Speaking of Valentine's Day.
Right.
So
I know he had been working on it for years. Can't wait to open those pages.
Such a nice guy. And we'll talk to Jane Yonke about that, too, at Wisconsin's oldest bookstore.
She'll be selling his book. She always does.
Yes. All right. And the Friend of a Friend competition is officially underway.
All right. It's a big one. We've got participants signed up. We've got the sponsorship lined up. We're ready to go.
Multiple participants already. We talked to one last week. We're going to talk to the second contestant that has officially signed up.
Right.
We'll talk to them next week.
Good.
And we want to thank our sponsors, Stonebridge Wealth Advisors and Greenfire, Builders of the Future.
Thank you very much.
And Rocket Industrial, of course.
Thank you, Rocket.
Sponsors of the Friend of a Friend competition. For $10,000. That's for first place.
Right.
And second place, it's official, $2,500.
Wow.
You get. So we'll have the leaderboard up between now and June of 2025. All you got to do is recruit people to move and live in the greatest city in America, Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah.
Who's coming up on the show this week, Paul?
Ryan, this week we have Marcus Nelson, a former employee in Silicon Valley. He worked with people like Facebook, Instagram, and he's from Wausau, and he's a big guy in AI.
He was really high up in Salesforce for a while.
That's correct.
And his Salesforce wanted to buy his company, and we're going to hear all about that. And yeah, now he's back in Wausau, Wisconsin.
Very interesting guy. Looking forward to that.
He's ranked as one of the top B2B marketers in the United States and sits on the United Nations Board of Social Influencers. And he's an adjunct professor at Harvard.
I knew he had a Harvard connection. What a guy.
He used to run Rockwater Cyber Cafe in Wausau back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that's Marcus Nelson coming up. It's going to be a cool interview.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
And when you are out there on the road for several weeks of shows, and when you scan the radio, I hope this song guides you home to Wausau.
You are out there on the road for several weeks of shows, and when you scan the radio, I hope this song will guide you home. They won't see us waiting when such great heights come down. They'll say that everything was perfect from far away.
Are you ready?
Goodbye 2024 and hello 2025.
Happy New Year.
May your new year be filled with higher ROI than the tower on top of Rib Mountain.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year!
This is the Wausau Business Show.
At Rooterware, we challenge the notion that sophisticated legal practices only exist in major metropolitan areas. Our team chooses to live and work in communities where many people only vacation or pass through. We enjoy a quality of life and have an excellent work-life balance, while still practicing exciting, challenging law in Wausau, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Wisconsin Rapids. Since 1920, we've been doing what we want and where we want to do it. Find us at rooterware.com.
At Incredible Bank, we want to recognize two local organizations for making a difference in our community. Bridge Street Mission in Wausau actively supports those experiencing homelessness and hunger by providing a warm location, food, fellowship, help, and encouragement. In Weston, the Green Heck Community Center offers many activities that provide valuable social and recreational opportunities for community members. We are proud to play our part in supporting you. Thank you for being incredible.
The Wausau Business Show. See, stop swinging with the balls in school. Let your feet flying up in the air. Singing, hey, did diddle. When you get in the middle of swinging like I didn't care. So I took a big chance at the high school dance. So Missy, who was ready to play? Buzz me, she was fooling. Why she knew what she was doing. When she told me how the world is made. She told me to walk this way. Talk this way. Walk this way. Talk this way. She told me.
This is the Wausau Business Show. I'm Ryan, and that's Paul. And ladies and gentlemen, now Marcus Nelson.
Hey, Marcus.
Marcus. Hey, how you doing?
Listen to the crowd.
Yes. Wow. Settle down back there. How you doing? We got you a cup of coffee and a Tom and Jerry's mug. I think that still holds true. It's just coffee in there. Sorry about that.
Tom and Jerry should have been in here, but
yeah.
Wasn't caffeinated.
So Marcus has been named the top 50 B2B marketing influencer by SAP. He is of the top 70 digital influencers in the world, named by the United Nations.
Wow.
Adjunct professor for Harvard, related to AI for writing. And he has an amazing career, but it started right here in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
All right.
Yep. So Marcus, correct me if I'm wrong, but part of the way that it started was you and your twin brother were cover models for J. Crew.
Yes. I was young. I needed the money.
Uh-huh.
It all started with modeling for J. Crew.
And that was while you were at Wausau East?
No. After college, I went up to West Coast and I worked for a record company. And I was
Which
there for
one?
Like 3 years. It's called Metro One. It was just some indie.
Any artists that we would know?
Crystal Lewis was probably, she's the owner's wife.
Okay.
right. She had an in.
So she did that. There was a, what do you call it when a bunch of people get together and sing a song?
We Are the World.
Well, no, but what is that called when people, an ensemble.
Okay.
An
ensemble.
In an ensemble with like Kirk Franklin and Bono and whatever. It was like a big hit back in 1995.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good enough. You go out there, Southern California, J. Crew comes knocking.
Yeah, I got to work in the studios with all these crazy like rappers and I'm, you know, as white as can be.
Yeah.
You
know. You're not a rapper.
Do you spit at all?
No. La-di-da-di, we like the party.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, follow nobody. We're just the minutes on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic. Right.
Anyway, the mic in my hand, so and I'm chilling and cooling just like a snowman.
Yeah. I'm working with like LA Posse. They're the guys that produced Run DMC, and Vogue, and LL Cool J. So Simon Muffler's the producer. So I'm hanging out with him and I'm meeting like K Supreme, The Alcoholics, Fred to the Head, who's this engineer who's done everybody. They call him Fred 40 to the Head or something like that. I can't even remember.
But this is right out of East. You just took it West?
No, I went to 2 years of Bible college.
Okay.
And then went out there.
So you went from Bible college to rappers.
One end of the spectrum to the next.
Yeah, it wasn't that glorious. I did marketing and I learned how to do storytelling, which is, that was like the thing I got to take away from all of that.
But let's back up for a second.
Sure.
You went to Bible school right after high school.
Yeah.
And then you guys had a church for a minute here in Wausau.
My dad had a church.
Okay.
But that was after that.
This, okay.
Yeah, that hadn't happened yet. It's Thrive Church now.
Yeah.
I think it was Christian Assembly years ago.
On Grand Ave.
On Grand Avenue.
Yep.
In fact, my dad was the architect that did all the interior of that.
Okay. So you think you're going to be following in your father's footsteps at that point?
No.
Or?
No. I didn't really want to be a minister, but I wanted to like help people.
Yeah. Huh?
And kind of brokered a deal like I won't go and do
dad,
it.
Dad, anyway, if I go to Bible school.
Exactly. But I don't want to go and do it.
Can I then do what I want to do, please?
There's a deal.
Okay.
All right. But I had a great time. Almost got kicked out like 6 times, but you know, it's great.
These Nelsons are.
Yes.
These Nelson twins. And at the time, there was a great band that was called Nelson.
Matthew and Gunner.
Also twins, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Great band from the 90s.
Can't miss that connection. Okay. So you wrap up there. And what city was that in?
Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Oh, sure. I'm heading to Broken Arrow next week for a wedding.
Believe it or not.
No. It's just south of their Tulsa.
And right in between Oklahoma City and Tulsa, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful area. So then you go out west.
California.
Yeah.
Did all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I had like offers to go work for LA Posse and all these other things. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Were you actually in the studio producing the music with these guys or assisting
them? The only
them
knobs I twisted were like, open the door. I was marketer for the record company.
Okay, got it.
How dare you, Ryan?
Sorry.
I was doing A&R for the studio.
Okay.
So
you were pumping
my responsibility to make sure they had everything they needed so that when they're in the studio, they're optimizing their time. And because we're a cheap little startup, basically, is we only could book things late at night because that's the only time it was cheap enough.
The studio time.
Yeah, studio time. So I would go to work at like 10 a.m. I'd work till like 4:30 or so, go home, grab something to eat, jump in the car, drive through rush hour traffic, like 2.5 hours up to LA, get to the studio, prep it, get everything done, artists would come in around 10:30 at night, and we'd record till 4 in the morning, and then head home.
What were you doing during the day?
Trying not to fall asleep.
Yeah.
No, I was a marketer. So okay. I wrote stories, and I would do radio promotion. So you'd call, this is back in the days before Clear Channel, right?
Yeah.
Call all the radio execs or the managers.
Try to sell them on the music, right?
Yes, yeah. And that's where the storytelling came in.
Okay, cool.
Telling stories about these artists that made them give a crap about this person's background or something that would tie in to that person to make them emotionally connected to the artist so they want to play them.
Cool.
Which is at the heart of marketing.
So then you're doing this. How did it smell in those studios in the middle of the night? I'm just curious.
Actually, did it smell green?
Yeah. I can't say that I remember.
Okay.
I was just trying not to get fired.
Okay.
I get chicken wings and 40s for the guys and turntables and
let them roll.
Yeah, and let them roll.
Very fun. What an experience. And how long did you do that?
3 years, 3.5 years.
And then somehow you wind up at J. Crew on the cover of the magazine.
So a friend of mine at Cliff, he was like one of my dearest friends. He's like, well, you know, I was telling him, I don't know what to do. I've got like these 4 or 5 job offers. And he said, why don't you just come up to Sun Valley, Idaho? This guy's life. He taught windsurfing in Monaco at the Monte Carlo Beach Hotel.
How'd you meet him?
That was during the summer. I met him in Bible college.
Okay. The people you meet in Bible college. Summer. Wow.
Yeah. Right? It's like band camp.
Yeah. In the Mediterranean, in the sun.
Yeah.
The Prince of Monaco's kids. Wow. You know, he's teaching him how to do stuff. And so then in the winter, he goes to Sun Valley, Idaho and teaches how to ski.
What a life.
Right?
If I'm not mistaken, Sun Valley, Idaho is the home of the first winter ski lift chairlift.
That's correct.
Right. Ever in the world?
It was a banana boat mechanical thing that they jimmy rigged to haul people instead of bananas.
It was the first chairlift anywhere.
That was the first chairlift.
Whoa. It was a banana boat.
not the banana boat, but the technology got the bananas in the boat.
Good trivia for when we interview the Skinners up at Granite Peak.
Yeah, right. Actually, they were one of the first chairlifts, or they had a T-bar or something in like 1937, which was, I think it was in the 30s that.
1936 is when Sun Valley.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so you're out there with the Prince of Monaco or is...
No, I wasn't. Well, that's a whole different story. I did end up in Monaco for a while. I was an au pair for an American woman.
Oh, they go the other way too? I thought that au pairs always came here.
I was there by accident. So anyway, we're all over the
place. Across the Atlantic.
We're all over the place.
I'm in Monaco. Okay, so
then I smuggled Bibles into the Soviet Union. Yeah. No, so I'm out in California and he says, why don't you come up to Sun Valley? I'll teach you how to snowboard.
Yeah.
And just, you know, we'll chill, take 2 weeks, you know, whatever, clear your mind and then make your decision.
Cool.
I thought, well, that sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
Got there and never left. I just fell in love with the mountains. I would say I learned how to snowboard. Eventually I did.
Yeah.
But most of it was really just tumbling.
Cool. Cool. And out there is where the headquarters of J. Crew are.
No, not their headquarters, but I got a job at a coffee shop. So I've got a job at the mountains to get my ski pass. And then I've got a job at this coffee shop.
In Sun Valley.
Cool. And so all these celebrities are coming in and everything. I got to have coffee with like Peter Cetera and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's a real happening place to be.
Yeah. And Demi Moore walks in. She's this big, you know, tiny.
Love Peter Cetera.
Yeah.
Chicago. Tell me what you dream at night.
Cue the Chicago music.
Yeah.
So all that to say is that these women were coming in and I'm being me, you know, flirty, whatever. And they kept coming in every day. And by the third day or whatever, I know what they're going to order.
Yeah.
And so I see them coming in through the window. And so I just start making whatever it is.
Yeah. Hey, Kathy, have the double latte again?
But we were, you know, it's a small town. That's what our whole coffee shop was known for, just to be, you know, on it.
Yeah.
So these girls were impressed that I did whatever and wasn't really a big deal. Part and parcel to that, you know, we'll put that aside for a second.
Mm-hmm.
My brother Angus, he's now moved to Sun Valley because that's where we are. So he comes to.
Yeah.
And he's looking in the newspaper and there's this, they call it a cattle call. It's basically like magazines or TV shows will say, you know, they'll post an article saying, hey, we're looking for backups or whatever.
Yeah.
And people will come in and they'll just, you know, literally a cattle call. There's just a line of people and then they walk in the door, they get a quick interview, you know, a couple questions and they shoot out the door and then in comes the next group. And
it's 150 people or whatever.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Wow.
It was so out the door.
Okay.
And I told Angus, absolutely not. I'm not interested. He had talked me into this once before when we were living here. We went out to Minneapolis to model for Paul Mitchell.
Oh, yeah. And the hair product.
Yeah. And I thought it would be real funny to pretend to trip. And nobody else did. Nobody else thought it was funny.
But you don't have any hair right now. But at the time, didn't you have like long blonde, long blonde hair?
Beautiful hair.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no one for that.
So you go to this cattle call.
Yeah, Angus. Go to this cattle call. No, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go.
You go against your will.
I go against my, well, because he's driving.
There's a certain irony in a guy named Angus going to a cattle call. Isn't there a little bit? Or is that just the bad dad joke? All bad dad jokes.
I didn't
jokes.
Make that connection till just now.
Yeah.
So we're up on the mountain. It's like spring skiing. It's a Sunday. We finish just like noon, whatever, blah. And I've got my snowboard pants and like a sweatshirt, and I'm just drenched. And we're driving, and we go by the place where the cattle call was. And sure enough, like you said, the big old line up.
There goes Angus. Yep.
Angus is like, and I'm like, no!
Yeah.
Anyway, we get in there, and everybody's dressed up trying to be J. Crew. You know, they got their khakis, they've got their Oxfords, whatever. Everyone's trying to look the part. Here we are in our snowboard pants and, you know, soaking wet.
Right.
I don't know. It takes like 40 minutes to get in there, whatever. The door opens and these girls are like, Marcus! I'm like, what? Because they knew who I was from the coffee shop.
It
was
They're all the regulars from the coffee shop. Yeah.
It was the editors and whatever. And,
Kathy with the soy latte.
Yeah. Double soy latte.
Okay.
So out of like 700 people, they chose two.
Okay.
And that was Angus and Marcus.
Oh, wow.
And then we roped in some friends later, but
And then from there, how long did it take before you were on the cover of J. Crew nationally or
that
internationally?
Was the spring of 96. So we shot for the 97 catalog.
And you were literally on the cover of that international magazine catalog.
And at the time, that was one of the biggest, I'm sure the circulation of that catalog was as big as anything.
Right up there with Abercrombie and Fitch and all of them, right? And how long were you a model with J. Crew then?
I want to say like, I actually don't know, like 10 or 12 issues.
Wow.
And the only reason we stopped doing it, because we had an agent down in Chicago and whatever, and the editor had, I think she went to Land's End, and they had a new editor came in who wanted a more, and I'm air quoting here, world appeal.
Okay.
So basically meant we were too American looking. So she went a different direction.
So is 12 catalogs, is that, how many catalogs come out a year?
Like two a month.
Something two like a month.
So
okay.
It wasn't long.
So is that a full-time job?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
You just show up and they give you a daily.
Good money?
Yeah, you get paid?
Well, at the time, it was really good money. I think it was, I think we got $13.50 a day.
Wow, that's
okay.
All right, cool.
This is 96.
But you had you still kept going with all the other work.
Yeah, of course.
And then eventually you come back to Wausau?
Yeah. So we had this idea for what ended up becoming Rockwater.
Yeah.
And it was this idea that wouldn't it be cool for kids that are kind of like, again, this is going to the, I don't want to be a minister, but I want to help people.
Yeah. Like, how old were you at this point?
27.
Okay.
Yeah. 26, something like that.
Okay.
And so we.
So what year did you graduate from East?
89.
Okay. Got it.
Mm-hmm. And so we come back and we start kind of ideating about, wouldn't it be cool if there was something for kids? Because we were thinking of ourselves because we grew up here, right?
Yeah.
And between 16 and 21, you're just getting in trouble. I mean, we're cruising grand. We're like, you know, toilet papering everybody's house and whatever. A lot of things I probably won't confess to, but, you know, we got in trouble. And I was trying to think of some ideas of like, what do kids do? And I would, all the culmination of everything I'd ever done, I'd worked in a coffee shop.
Yeah.
I'd worked in the music industry. Yeah. So I had context for that. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to create this safe space for people to come and hang out and do whatever. And plus, I was getting myself into technology. I'd taught myself HTML and CSS and Photoshop and whatever. Well, we could offer some courses for that, teach kids, you know, plant the seed that kids can do more in Wausau than what they're expecting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this was before any other coffee shop in Wausau, except for Something's Brewing was going on at the time, right?
We were the very first cyber cafe in Wisconsin. Struggling to, because we raised about, I think $300,000, $250,000 to build it out.
Okay.
Right.
And then we were doing the music festivals. We kind of hit it too big on the first festival and then pulled back on the second festival, but managed to get through all of that. But we're trying to raise money to like have our own home. And simultaneously, I started a Citizen Wausau, which was our local newspaper that we created. It was like a citizen journal.
Kind of like City Pages.
Except that anybody could write.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So, you know, the idea was that people of the community would hear from people from the community. Mm-hmm. And, nice. You know, of course, we'd edit some of it just, you know, in case they weren't confident in their writing, we'd help them.
Kind of like a blog before blogs were blogs. Is that right? Yeah. Is that fair?
No, blogs had been blogs.
Okay.
But this was a printed paper.
But this, no. Okay. This was all online.
Okay.
And so it's basically like what, WASA Pilot?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like that.
Okay, that's cool. Basically cool.
So we did that. And then I started this company called User Voice. It was this idea. I'd been in San Francisco at a party and met this kid. He was like 10 or 12 years younger than me. And we just started chatting about how hard it is to create product. Mm-hmm. When you're building something brand new, you don't know what the expectations of your customers are. You're guessing, right? So you're thinking, well, I'm going to fix my problem, but I don't know if that fixes everybody's problem.
Yeah.
And so you do your best. Out of that, the big things then was Dig, and then Reddit was kind of coming on the scene.
Cool.
And it was this thing where people could submit news articles and people could vote them up or down. And we thought, wouldn't that be cool to do in a public forum with feedback?
Yeah.
You know, somebody could come back, because at that point, the way most companies got feedback was either you got a phone call and it disappeared in some black box somewhere,
right?
Or it was email.
Yeah.
And how do you sort that email? Who's responsible for that? And then who's going to take that to production?
Email is so tough in companies.
Yeah.
It gets lost in the shuffle so easily.
So we thought, let's build a system front to back where we could gather feedback, give validation to the customers, run it through production, and at the time that it launches, immediately anybody and everybody who's contributed to the idea gets an email that says, hey, we heard you, we listened, it's live right now. That
took off. Yeah, I would imagine. And that kind of led, I would assume, that parlayed into Salesforce and that gig, right?
Yep. Salesforce tried to buy us.
Well, that's a compliment, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we were 9 months old,
and
but
Salesforce
we already had 7,500 customers, including Microsoft and Intuit and what, it just exploded.
And they approach you, are you for sale?
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. I got called into Clarence So, who is one of the founding guys over at Salesforce, had gotten wind of us through Jeremiah Owing, who had been writing for Forrester. He was an analyst.
Research company.
Yeah. And he's the one that really wrote the first article about us, because he was practicing it on his own blog, that little feedback tab that you now see everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I created, okay. Right? I designed it.
Yeah. You're the founder of the feedback
tab. I'm the godfather of the feedback tab.
Cool. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Then did they wind up buying
it?
No.
So my two co-founders were much younger than I was.
Yeah.
The one co-founder, he spun himself off because there are what we call gunslingers. And then you have your more conservative developer, right? Gunslingers are the launch once, roll back, fix, roll back out.
Wait, shoot from the hip.
Shoot from the hip, right? Yeah. And when you're starting out, that can be helpful.
Yeah, fail forward.
Fail fast,
right? Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But because we had all these enterprise clients so fast, the other developer who was like a write 15 times, launch once.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
He really refined the code and he was an excellent developer. And so Lance, that was his name, he ended up leaving and going, and he became the lead developer for a small startup called Kickstarter. So he was the original developer for that.
Very cool.
I don't think he was on the founding team, but he was the one of their head developers.
One of their first hires.
Yeah.
So where does the philosophy of like MVP, minimum viable product, come in? Is that somewhere in the middle between the two of those?
Your minimal viable product is the first thing you want to put out the door.
Yeah.
That is there. It's just bare bones.
Yeah.
You know,
not necessarily a gunslinger doing MVP.
No,
you're just still a gunslinger.
I used to say to people, I was like, you know, ship fast, shippy. Ship.
Yeah. Ship fast.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah. Try to say that three times fast. If you stay and wait till everything's perfect,
right. You can't do it.
You're going to miss your moment.
Perfection is the enemy of progress.
That's right.
Yeah.
And 80% great is 100% awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Get it out the door.
Mm-hmm.
So then it falls through at Salesforce because these guys are young and they just didn't understand the possibility.
I went back to Salesforce because at this time now I have two kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I say, you know, I could use the paycheck. And so they introduced me to their CMO.
Cool.
And so I meet him and then I meet some of the team. The first role they were talking about was a VP of Service Cloud, which is their customer service product. And I was scared spitless.
Yeah.
But they had confidence in me. Yeah. They had confidence in me because they saw I was competing.
Right.
Right. And I didn't have the confidence in myself yet.
So you were working at Salesforce in Silicon Valley.
Yes.
When it was exploding.
When I started in 2009, August 26th of 2009, not that I remember.
That is wild. So you started at Salesforce in 2009.
Yeah.
When they were a baby.
About 2,900 employees. And then by the time I left, which was 2012, I think we were at like 18,000. Today, I think it's like 80.
Yeah, that's
80,
wild.
000, I think.
One of the Fortune 500 companies, Salesforce.com, one of the best, you know, technology companies or brands out there.
I actually interviewed with them in 2009 when they opened their Chicago branch.
Did they make you the offer, Paul?
I kind of cut ties and went a different direction prior to that.
Yes,
they gave me an offer.
I brought it up. It would have been really awkward if they wouldn't have made you the offer.
So I would have joined the company when Marcus did at 2,600 employees or something. And I could have ridden that wave. Darn it.
Yeah. I came in, my strike price on my shares, because they give you always
stock
give you
options.
Equity,
yeah.
I'm going to plug my ears now.
Go ahead. Paul wants to leave the room quick.
my strike price was $54. And by the time I left, it was 270 or 275, something like that. And then two years later, it split 4-1.
So you got four times. I just fell over my chair.
Paul, hang on. I'll get the compressor or whatever I have to do.
And then I got divorced and then it went away.
And it got split by two.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. But you were working on campus at Salesforce.
Mm-hmm.
Now is that the epitome of, hey, we got ping pong tables in our offices and slides down to the main lobby. And
who wants a beer and play foosball?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
When we
you guys weren't even working, were you?
Yeah.
Playing all the time? Tell us about their campus.
That's when we, in User Voice, when we got there, there was only like a dozen or two dozen companies in San Francisco because everything else was in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was that we thought that's where our customers were.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of our philosophy.
To be in San Francisco.
To be in San Francisco, right? And as it turns out, everybody else started realizing that San Francisco was a cool town, whatever, we could do this. And venture capital had just started opening offices in San Francisco because up until now, everything was on Sand Hill Road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to raise money, you were going to Sand Hill Road.
Or it was out on the East Coast.
Or, New York somewhere.
That's wild.
And so we go down there to raise capital or whatever. And then who was it? Was it Peter Thiel, Founders Fund?
What sure. Was that? Yeah. 0-1.
One of them that we pitched, and they did invest, but not from, they invested from their Facebook fund, not their Founders Fund.
Yeah.
But I think that was the first one that we pitched that was actually in San Francisco.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure.
Were in the room pitching to get more capital for Salesforce.
Raise capital. Yeah. No. I was raising capital for User Voice.
For your company.
Yeah, for your company. And then that did not get sold to Salesforce. Did they use any of the technology?
So they built their own thing called Salesforce Ideas.
Okay.
It was very clunky and it was hard for them to sell.
Did Peter Thiel give you guys capital?
Yeah. Yeah. And in this case, Dave McClure was part of the PayPal mafia.
Wow. With Elon Musk.
Oh, with Elon.
Yeah. You've heard of that guy.
Heard of him.
So Dave McClure discovered us.
Okay.
And he was the one that kind of shopped us around and helped us get all the pinpoints together. And that was 2009. So we're starting in 2008 and we're running through October 10th hits. Everything crashes.
Yeah.
Everything's gone.
Yeah.
And we're like,
that was the real estate and
everything went sideways. Yeah. Nobody was investing.
Default swaps and all that.
The very next quarter of 2009, only five companies in Silicon Valley raised money. And we were one of them.
Wow. And so how did you exit that company?
I'm still a shareholder.
In the
User Voice.
In User Voice.
And it's still called User Voice?
And it's still called User Voice.
And you're still a shareholder in Salesforce, I'm assuming, as well?
No.
You got out.
you got out high, I hope?
I bought a house.
Oh, that's great. So tell us about the campus. Give everybody a little sense of what it's like to work at Salesforce as it's skyrocketing.
So I worked in marketing. And at that time, and actually, I would even say it is still true. We used to joke around that Salesforce is a marketing company that happens to sell software.
Yeah.
And we had a different lifestyle than if you were in the R&D team.
Oh,
if you were doing an R&D, that was just a lump for everybody that did development. Some companies, R&D is like a special little elite group, you know, the SEAL team.
Yeah. Right.
But at where we were, it was just...
It was 70% of the employees.
So you must have gone over there and realized what you were missing on.
Oh,
the,
my God. Right? Yes.
So what were they keeping from you?
Had the quintessential Salesforce brick wall warehouse looking big, huge open windows, lots of glass, you know, looking out over Alcatraz and just this gorgeous, you know, like you said, foosball, pool tables, snacks galore,
espresso bar,
everything.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, that was so cool. It seems a little played out now, I think, but at the time, that's
you know what?
Amazing.
I will be perfectly honest, I had never been in that environment before. And I discovered Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, a lot of Texas.
I must drink like that first week or 2 weeks I was there. I was probably close to pissing my pants every moment of the day because I was drinking so much soda.
It's so good, Diet Dr. Pepper.
It's right there. Yeah, it's and then they bring unlimited. In fresh fruit. You know, they have a fruit delivery. And
right.
So
they have chefs on it.
Oh, well, no, we didn't have that. Okay. So Salesforce never did the whole.
They're like, enough is enough.
All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. At some point, we got. Yeah. But their buildings were never built for that, right?
So, right.
But when Google, you know, they built their own buildings, of course, they put in all that stuff. And then when Facebook, I did get to go to the Facebook campus, and that place is off the hook. Off
the
hook. It's got a walking campus, and you can walk from building to building, and kind of courtyard. Are all of like Mark's favorite foods.
Okay.
So you've got, you know, Phil's Coffee, which was his favorite coffee.
Oh my gosh.
And then you've got like this barbecue place from, I think they met in Texas or something.
Oh,
and then
the real
he convinced
deal.
Him to start one.
It's like Mark Zuckerberg's yes. playground, basically.
Yes.
That's wild.
So yeah, it was pretty crazy. And then when you walk in the one of the main offices, there's all this graffiti. This guy had, he'd paid him in stock.
Wow.
To do all this graffiti. And the dude, I think he made like, I want to say $50 million or something, this kid.
The richest graffiti artist in
yes,
the world.
Yes. And when you I don't out- know how much money it was, right. but it was a lot.
But when you were out there, correct me if I'm wrong, fellow Wasonian Marissa Mayer was kind of at Google at that time too, right?
Our ships were passing very, very frequently.
Yeah.
I'd go to like the TechCrunch Disrupt and I'd see her and whatever. And I knew her brother because he used to come to Rockwater all the time.
Okay.
I didn't really know Marissa because yeah, she was a few years behind me.
Behind you and at West.
Yeah. And at West.
But both from Wausau.
Yeah. We're friends on Facebook, I guess.
Yeah. Whatever. Well, she was the sixth employee at Google and she went on to be the CEO of Yahoo. And both of you were from Wausau and really coming up in the tech
about
scene.
About the same time.
In San Francisco at the time.
Don't forget Hillary Ware.
Hillary Ware.
She is now, she's head of a commercial, I think, commercial division of Apple.
As a lawyer.
Yeah. Then. She actually interviewed my daughter to see if my daughter would be a good fit for her assistant.
Oh, cool. Wow. How old's your daughter?
24.
Because she used to be, Hillary Ware used to be corporate legal counsel for Netflix, did she not?
That's correct. She was there for a lifetime.
Something great in the water
here in Wausau.
Here in Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the future.
Okay.
Dr. Natalie Pethoff, she is a Wall Street Journal bestselling author. She was a VP at PricewaterhouseCoopers and a VP at Salesforce, and she worked at the esteemed Forrester Research firm. She describes you, Marcus, as one of those rare people you meet in life that can see the future as bright as day. So what is the future, Marcus?
Wow, that was a good quote you captured.
$1 million question.
Yeah.
Wasn't expecting that.
I mean, ChatGPT, we've got it all coming on the scene. AI, everything's exploding right now with artificial intelligence. What is the future? You've got a new book out all about how to write a book with ChatGPT, the ups and downs, ins and outs of writing with AI. You know, I think you better than anybody being on the top 50 B2B marketing influencer list at SAP, being part of the United Nation's top 70 tech people in the world, and on. What's the future?
Okay. Let's talk AI, since that was what you brought up. Artificial intelligence is going to go sideways, probably within the next 2 years.
And what do you mean by sideways?
It's going to fail. As we know it, the AI we know today. And the reason being is that most of the AIs are being competitive in the sense that they created algorithms based on whatever they could find on the internet.
Yeah.
Right.
And so like Reddit communities, a lot of open AI used, you know, Reddit.
Sucked it all in and whatever. Analyzed.
But you've got all these biases baked in.
Yeah.
Right. People being racist or people being sexist or, you know, having, you know, colorful language.
No filters. Yeah. Yeah.
And so a lot of the filtering for creating your algorithm, these LLMs, language models, what they have to do is they've got to teach, like basically scold the algorithm to say, look, you don't say this, or you're not supposed to do this, or whatever. So you're basically parenting this tool.
Computer.
And then over time, you're actually teaching the tool to teach itself.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's happening in a black box. So you don't even, you're the developer of the tool. You don't even know how it's working.
Right.
And so that's where you end up getting what they call hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And a hallucination, for those who don't know, it's like when the AI very confidently tells you this is the answer and it's complete BS.
Very confidently, though. It does it with confidence.
Yeah. I know a few people like that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, dumb but confident.
Yes. Sometimes confidence goes a long way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll tell you something and it will, you know, on the face value, it will seem and feel like, oh, this is the right thing. And if you run with it, you know, and all of a sudden someone's going to say, hey, I don't think that's right. You know,
but ChatGPT told me it was a fact.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
That's already happened a couple times, right? You've had writers who, you know, wrote articles or whatever, and it was like completely lifted from somebody else's, you know, writing, plagiarized.
Right.
And so those are the issues. I think what's going to happen right now is you're going to see, or what you're already starting to see, is people are realizing the limitations of the current AI we have.
Okay.
So everybody who's thinking that AI is going to take over the world, we're going to have Skynet and we're all going to die. In today's iteration, I don't know how that ever happened.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But what I believe is going to happen, this is just like in the early days of the internet. Right now, everything's frothy. Mm-hmm. Investors are throwing billions of dollars into it. Mm-hmm. Some are going to make billions. Some are going to lose millions or even billions. Mm-hmm. And what's going to happen is it's all going to topple over.
Oh.
And just like what we saw in the Web 1 world, Web 2 world, both of them had the same sort of situations. And then there'll be a lull.
Yeah. Okay.
2 or 3 years will go by. Guys that lost their jobs.
Yeah. There's going to be a bubble and it's going to burst again.
It's in a bubble right now. Okay. We're in a bubble.
And with 1 and 2, Web 1 and Web 2, how did that tumble over?
So Web 1 was frothy in the sense that everybody wanted to
invest anything.
Invest whatever it was. Yeah. All you had to do was walk in and have an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if it was on the internet and had a .com next to it,
you'd get a million bucks.
You're going to get some money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what ends up happening there is that all of a sudden it's smoke and mirrors. People were selling fluff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had the pets.com and
Super
all those
Bowl
guys
commercial.
All go sideways.
Yeah.
Right? And then there was a lull. And then you had what we called Web 2.0.
Yeah.
And that was more social, more communal, more cooperative, mm-hmm. more open source. And you had this next wave of products that came out. And out of that came Facebook, that came Twitter, that
MySpace.
Yeah. And that was actually the heyday of Amazon too, because Amazon was still like bleeding cash.
Yeah.
But they started taking their own tech and realizing, gosh, a lot of people could benefit from these flexible servers that we've built, because they built these servers to be able to take loads and then peel back if they didn't need the loads so they could save money. Mm-hmm. So they thought, well, shoot, what if we kind of turn this into a product? And that became Amazon Web Services, AWS.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
And actually today, that's the only way Amazon makes money today.
Yeah, they were unprofitable for their first decade or
whatever.
They're
still unprofitable on their product size.
Distribution business.
The distribution business, they don't make any money.
AWS is supplementing it all.
And like
Netflix. It makes us feel better about our distribution business, which does make money. Yeah. At very low margins for our clients.
Yeah, very low margins.
Yeah. Disgustingly low. We don't make money at all, hardly.
So
we make at least $1 of net profit a year.
Okay.
Ask Tracy to come in and sort this all out. Yeah.
So AWS, they are the hosting platform for Netflix, for Dropbox, for, you know, every major
tool. We use them,
You guys use them. Okay.
Yeah.
So pretty much anybody and everybody uses AWS.
Yeah.
That's where they make their money. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see that same sort of thing happen, where all of a sudden the technology we know today is going to not become irrelevant. I wouldn't say that. There's still going to be a place for a lot of this technology.
Okay.
But what I feel is going to happen is you're going to see an implosion. We'll probably lose 80% of the companies out there. You go to, there's a domain called there's an AI for that.com.
Mm. So it's a feeding frenzy now.
It's a feeding frenzy now.
Okay. So this is all going to topple over.
It's all going to topple over. Yeah. And what you're going to see is that out of that, I believe you're going to see a lot of like disgruntled developers who are going to find each other.
Yeah.
And ideas will collide. They'll be at a co-working space. They'll be talking, shooting the breeze, and come up with a new idea. And out of that is where you're going to see the rebirth. And mm-hmm. that version of AI will be refined. That AI will be disciplined. And that's the AI that I think is really going to be, it's going to change the world. That's the
AI. How far are we from there? How far are we off?
I'm going to say 4 to 5 years.
Okay.
And that's where we're going to see medical breakthroughs. That's where we're going to see assemblies. That's where we're maybe even solves like housing shortage issues. Mm. We're going to see a lot of that type of stuff happen out of AI, where all of a sudden now we can figure out new ways to do robotics.
Yeah.
And those robotics will find new ways of manufacturing.
God forbid, the way it changes war.
And, you know, I mean, look at this. You've got concrete 3D printers right now making houses down in Texas.
Yeah, that's wild.
And there's another one that does it with wood pulp. And imagine what happens.
Huge 3D printers.
Huge 3D printers that you just haul up on your land. Nuts. You build your foundation ahead of time, but you just haul it up in the land, tell it where to go, give it the dimensions, and off it goes.
What do you think the big difference is going to be with, let's call it AI 2.0? Is it that it's going to think for itself, where now it just kind of plagiarizes?
Right now, it's plagiarizing a lot.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it's going to start thinking for itself.
AGI. And that's when you
think. That's the AGI that we're going to see.
Artificial general intelligence. Mm-hmm. And that's what everybody's kind of afraid of.
Yeah, should we be afraid of that?
But they think that's happening now. And I'm telling you, it's not.
So 5 years, we should be afraid?
Are you afraid?
Be not afraid.
Sing to him while he contemplates this.
Here's the thing. I think the best thing that has ever happened to humanity is capitalism. The worst thing that's ever going to happen to humanity is capitalism. Mm. And what happens, you're even seeing it now, OpenAI, which was a nonprofit organization, has just now switched to for-profit. Mm-hmm. And then whenever we have people that are trying to go for-profit, they start making shortcuts. Mm-hmm. There's no regulations. There's no anything to keep them in a box. So they're going to try everything they can. I mean, look at Lake Wausau. The whole reason we can't eat the fish out of Lake Wausau is because there was nobody to say, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't put chemicals in the water.
You're not supposed to eat the fish out of... Uh-oh.
I think you can eat one a week.
Okay. You can do it, Paul, as long as it's sushi. As long as you don't cook it, you're fine.
If it's got the little black dots in it, you'll know.
Yeah. Then you know it's good.
A lot of mercury levels going on there. Yeah.
So taking that back to AI, there's no regulation. Nobody even knows. And this is the other thing, not to talk politics, but our politicians are old. Mm. They don't understand. They're not even having the right conversations.
Yeah. They don't know how to have the right conversations.
They don't know how to.
Not asking the right questions. You don't know what you don't know.
And here's the thing. Our problems are going to be here in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When AI starts kicking in and all of these other displacements start happening.
Right.
You know, I was involved in the trucking industry. We were working on AI. And when I worked for Exos Trucks, you know, the thing that we talked about is there's 3.5 million truck drivers, over the road truck drivers.
God bless them.
And God bless them. They make this country work.
Yeah.
And they're great at what they do. They get that thing from here to there.
Love them.
And what happens when those are all automated, those jobs? What do we do with 3.5 million people who don't have an education, who do not have the ability because of whether it was their family situation or financial situation, they don't have the ability to just like drop everything and go back to school.
Because you're assuming and you're saying it as fact that within about 5 or 6 years that all of those trucking positions
will fall away.
Will fall away because there will be automated trucks that will drive themselves.
So they'll just be autonomous everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not far away from that.
For long haul, we're not far away from that. Mm-hmm. Now, for in-city, last mile, we're still a ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you've got to navigate all the streetlights and whatever. But getting it from a freeway
to another freeway.
So that'll happen. You're also going to see like customer service disappear. You know, right now, you can actually go online and buy a customer service thing. You take your knowledge base, throw it into the system, and it will voice whatever it is and answer everybody's questions, and you won't even know it's a human.
You can hire a robot customer service agent, basically.
I guess if you're selling medium and small and large shirts, that's easier than the complexities of the business that we're in,
for example. Probably, right.
But I could see how that would work in shoes or whatever.
So I think, you know, the opportunity for young people right now is either figure out this AI world, go
embrace
to NTC and take their, you know, to their robotics and learn how to do manufacturing.
Well, they have an AI institute there now. Yeah.
Because the days of, you know, breaking your back over an assembly line are going away.
Yeah.
The idea that you can just learn how to code and get a job, that's gone already.
Yeah.
The last 18 months has proven to us how many developers I know that are out of work right now
because of AI.
It's insane.
Yeah. Continuing that on then.
So some of those jobs may come back as people start kind of
realizing the truth. Yeah.
Especially writers.
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to create content, but the content's just regurgitated, you know,
it's a negative feedback loop.
Yeah.
So what are the jobs of the future then, Marcus?
The one that I think is going to be paramount is service jobs. You know, we're not going to see robotic plumbers anytime soon.
Well, somebody's got to build the 3D printer that the AI bot prints out for the new McDonald's that they're building or whatever, right? And this isn't coming from just anybody. This is coming from a Harvard adjunct instructor, United Nations top 70 digital influencer in the world, Marcus Nelson, author of How to Write a Book with ChatGPT that just came out. And we'll post this on our website. I'm looking for it. Thanks for bringing a copy of this. I wish we would have gotten it beforehand, but it just came out last
just
week,
came
right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to digging into that. And then the Executive Academy for AI Leadership. Can you talk about that you're starting up?
So I have this concept of, because AI is moving the way that it is, there are a number of, and I'll go back to what I said earlier about politicians, the threat right now that people understand is that AI is something. And that's about the extent of it,
mm-hmm. right?
They don't know why,
yeah.
they don't know what,
right.
and they don't know when.
Yeah.
So somebody needs to sit down with these guys. And, you know, they might be a vice president, they might be a director, they may be the CEO. And, you know, they're hearing people talk about AI and all the things that it can do, and they're just glazed over.
Right.
They're just a glazed donut looking at them, smiling and going, I don't know what the hell you're talking
hopefully
about.
Staying awake.
No, hopefully staying awake.
They've heard of it.
That's They've heard of
the
it,
extent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the idea is, by creating Exec Academy, I'm going to ramp it up, and there'll be different levels,
yeah.
but there'll be a starter level, which is what the course I'm offering starting in January. It'll be Zoom and whatever, okay. and I'll have assignments for you. So yeah. the idea is that we'll have 90 minutes on Tuesdays, and those 90 minutes will be 45 minutes of instruction mm-hmm. and then 45 minutes of Q&A. And then we'll have a kind of office working meeting on Thursdays, and that'll be 2 hours, and that'll be come to me with your problems.
Mm-hmm.
And then we solve them together. You've got everybody on the Zoom call mm-hmm. and we're working through problems in real time.
Globally.
Wherever
yeah,
you are.
Right.
Wherever
yeah.
you are.
And
yeah.
so the idea is that you're creating a community where people can learn from each other, from their peers. And in that community, the value is that they've got resources. So out of that, I'll be creating a lot of these resources. And in time, I'll have a staff and whatever, hopefully, mm-hmm. knock on...
Well, you've
That's
done
close
it all
to wood. Yeah.
If, when you say your mind is something, yeah. you've got a proven track record of doing it in the past. So,
yeah. yeah. And so the idea is that I'm going to start small. You know, something Mark Craig told me, and I've never forgotten it.
The wise Mark Craig.
The wise from the...
What year did he tell you this?
This is after I was feeling really down because I was closing up the co-working space.
Yeah. Oh, so this was like late 90s, early 2000s?
Yeah. This was like 2003, maybe.
Okay. All right. Like so it stuck with you all this
yeah.
time.
And
Mark probably doesn't remember what he told you. So here we go.
I reminded him the other day. So now he'll remember.
It still might not.
No, he told me, because I was feeling really down about, you know, failing or whatever. And that's
right.
the thing. You know, we didn't even talk about that. Being in a small town, failure is seems to be received as a permanency.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody fails, you think, oh, well, that's a guy that did whatever.
Yeah, there's no anonymity.
Yeah.
Everyone seems to remember yeah. that. Yeah, yeah, right.
Whereas in, you know, the West Coast, failure's a positive.
Oh, my God. We have a sign up here that says fail often and fail fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. You are encouraged. Even the investors will say, spend, go, do. And if it doesn't work, we'll try something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Throw it up against the wall and see what sticks. Because if you don't, you're not taking any risks and you're not moving forward.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I didn't know that. I didn't realize it. I saw it as a stain, you
yeah.
know, because Rockwater got closed down. I'd already handed off Citizen Wausau.
Yeah.
And now this co-working space, and I'm feeling really down about myself.
Okay.
Thinking,
three strikes.
Yeah, three strikes. And he said, sometimes you don't have to swing for the fence, Marcus. Just get on base.
Oh. Yeah, singles count too.
Mark Craig.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, but failure is so great. I mean, like, we interview a lot of people, obviously, for jobs at Rocket Industrial, and oftentimes we'll be in an interview asking, well, where have you failed in your life?
Mm-hmm.
Especially leadership and executive leadership positions, because if you have never failed in your life,
that's suspicious.
That's mm-hmm. somebody that's not willing to take a
right,
risk or,
right.
or too adverse to
it's
risk.
A little bit of a red flag, actually.
You learn
yeah.
so much
yeah.
through failure, and you don't learn that until, I guess, you get older, like Mark's age.
I'll tell you one more story.
Yeah.
One more story, a local story.
Yeah.
In all of that, I was, you know, going through these hard times and whatnot, and I ran into Bob Wyrock, you know,
founder of the
on.
Jefferson Street Inn,
where we sit today,
founder of Wausau Financial
mm-hmm.
Systems,
yeah.
founder of a lot of different businesses,
and
okay.
he just started a new newsletter,
yeah, with Tom Marks, with
never
Tom
stops,
Marks.
Yeah,
jeez.
Man,
is he
like
also
so insular here?
Yeah, at any rate, you run into
yeah,
Bob
so
Wyrock, Mr. Wyrock.
I'm telling him, you know, what's going on, whatever, and he's like, look, Marcus, I have a house I'm renovating in Cronawater, you can have it. Go live in it. You can pay rent when you can.
Sweet deal.
And so then, you know, I moved my family there. I've got two kids and trying to figure out what I'm going to do next in my life.
Yeah.
And he's like, Marcus, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you $10,000.
Mm.
He's like, if you're full of shit, it's going to mean nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, but if you're for real,
yeah.
it's going to grow wings and you're going to fly.
Yeah.
6 months later, I was moving to Silicon Valley.
And what cool. year was that?
Well, I started in 2007, moved in 2008.
Yeah, Bob Weirach never ceases to amaze. We got to get him on the show.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing
but
story.
I told that story in front of about 500 people in Omaha, Nebraska, and I couldn't stop crying.
Oh, really? Well, and then they elected Bob Weirach mayor.
Terrible. I never got invited back to speak at that place. But yeah,
this guy's a mess.
Telling a story, the gravity of that moment came upon me that I all of a sudden realized that, holy crap, everything I've gone through, all that pain, all that anguish, all that failure, all that feeling like you're nobody.
Yeah.
I mean, even to this day, as you're reading that, I'm like, well, I'd like to meet that guy. Yeah. You know, it doesn't feel real to you. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where people end up with that imposter syndrome in their lives. They feel like they don't belong. They don't feel like they deserve it, especially coming in a small town like a Wausau, where all of a sudden you're like, who am I? You know, and nobody wants to stick their head up too high because somebody else is going to come and knock you back down.
Yeah.
And so how do you get to a point where everybody wins? How do we get it to where I want that person to win? I'm not going to be jealous. I'm not going to be resentful. I want you to win because if you win, we win.
Yeah. Rising tides.
Well, Marcus, now you're back in Wausau. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Last I checked. Yeah.
I mean, you're living here now. I mean, you're here now.
Currently. It wasn't supposed to be permanent. It was not supposed to be permanent.
How long have you been in Wausau now?
Now it's been a year exactly.
Very cool. Well, we should have given you this sooner, but we have boomerangs that we printed up here. Official boomerangs. It says, thanks for boomeranging back to Wausau. Welcome home, Wausau Business Show. So
yeah, Marcus.
Enjoy that, Marcus. There you go.
As he throws it to me.
and it didn't come back to him.
In conclusion, you know, you've said a lot of amazing things, and we've learned a lot about you and your career and the world here today. So thanks for stopping by. I look forward to keeping in touch. You got to come back and update us on how things are going and everything, because I'm sure the audience would love it. And if you want any more information about Marcus and his career and his offerings, what's the best way to contact you?
Google Marcus Nelson.
There you go. You know, I don't know where your brother Angus is, but I still think back, and we're going to post your J. Crew cover.
He's in a cattle call line right now.
He's in Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Cool. Last week, we were at Dave's Bullet Dome for the Packer game, and we ran into somebody that worked at Prada in Asia, and she is bringing a Dave's Bullet Dome t-shirt back to a Prada model. When was the last time you had a Dave's Bullet Dome t-shirt on as a J. Crew model? I'm just curious.
Never.
We got to change that.
We got to get you one. Well, thanks for stopping by. Marcus Nelson.
Fascinating.
Full Nelson Marketing, and you can Google Marcus Nelson for more information. Thanks for stopping by, Marcus.
Well, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. Marcus Nelson, everybody.
All right.
Trucking, got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking like the doodah man together. More or less in line, just keep trucking on, on, on. Lately it occurs to me, what a long, strange trip it's been.
From memories of Scott Street Steak and Pub to the beer at Dave's Bullet Dome, this is the Wausau Business Show.
Nestled deep in the heart of central Wisconsin lies an innovative center of imagination, a city where past movers and shakers have been quickly passed by for a new generation of minds that think outside the box. These are the creative thinkers, a revival of entrepreneurs and dreamers. This is a city of opportunity. This is Wausau. Not too many lumberjacks left in this town. Small town roots with big city dreams. Your hometown is going somewhere. And where they're going is Rockwater. This visionary cyber cafe offers the best in live entertainment, internet access, and espresso. A revolutionary design in youth culture and the arts. They call it the moral aggression. You'll call it home. But don't bring your American Express or your Visa, because they don't take credit cards just yet. Rockwater, it's the only place you'll want to be. For more information, call 849-2328 or visit www.rockwater.org.
You're tuned in to the Wausau Business Show.
Experience the Third Street Lifestyle Center in downtown Wausau with great restaurants, Char Grill House, Lemongrass, Chow, Jalapenos, great pizza at Polito's, subs at Jimmy John's, food and drinks at the Pinery Coffee Shop, unwind at the Chocolate Cafe, stop by Forward Beverage, massages at the Reflexology Center, shop at Magnolia Soap and Bath, Isaac's Fine Apparel, Tanya's Bridal, get a trim at Modern Gents, find something classy at Campbell Haynes, plan your special event at the Jefferson Street Inn. Experience the Third Street Lifestyle Center, downtown Wausau.
It's the Wausau Business Show with Brian and Paul.
I resolved to call her up.
Paul, look, it's Sting's New Year's resolution from 1981.
Oh, what does it say?
I resolved to call her up.
I resolved to call her up.
The Wausau Business Show.
That's right.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Paul.
And episode number 39 concludes by telling you who's coming up on episode number 40. Paul, who's on the show next week?
Next week, we're going to have the guys who started Big Timber Entertainment. One out of Nashville, one out of right here in Wausau.
They are in the music industry running a record label, and they've got two big up-and-coming artists that are going to hopefully make it big pretty soon.
Yeah, can't wait to talk to them. That's Troy and Mark on the show next week.
Managing partners of Big Timber Entertainment.
Cool guys.
And until then, from high atop Rib Mountain, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this has been a Wausau Business Show transmission. The end!
The warmth of your love's like the warmth from the sun, and this will be our year to a long time to come. Don't let go of my hand now, the darkness has gone. This will be our year to a long time to come.
Das has been a Wausau Business Show transmission. Happy New Year, Wausau. Allreiz reserviert 2025.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.